SQL Down Under is a podcast for professionals working in the SQL Server community. SQL Server is a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions expressed during the podcast are individual opinions and may not reflect the opinions of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation.
Introducing Show 96 with guest Jerry Nixon. Welcome. My guest today is Jerry Nixon. Jerry is a principal product manager for data and AI at Microsoft. Jerry said he's focused on the developer persona to minimize onboarding friction and maximize value. He's leading efforts to integrate proven open source tools and manage resources as drop-in components that developers can use to simplify emerging AI solutions. Jerry's also a professor of computer science and a regular speaker on .NET and SQL with a focus on intelligent apps powered by practical architectures that really work. He said he's also a big fan of Data API Builder. So welcome, Jerry.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be here on your 96th show. Congratulations. That's quite a number.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I think there's an awful lot don't get past five or six, I gather. So
that's right. That's nice work. Not too long, you can celebrate 100. That's pretty intense.
Yes, getting very close. So
have you picked your topic for 100?
Who haven't come across you, just tell us a little bit about your current role and I suppose what brought you to it in the first place.
I'd be glad to. Yeah. My current role is, well, it's inside Data Azure. So Data Azure is a big umbrella for all the databases inside of Azure, and that includes SQL. And so the whole Microsoft SQL family includes SQL Server that you and I would install on-prem, as well as Azure SQL and every flavor of Azure SQL that you can imagine, including managed instance and VM and everything along those lines. That's been my family that I'm in, and my focus has really been on the developer story. And so I have been the product manager for Data API Builder now for about 3 years, and really trying to figure out where the pain points are for developers to make sure that their experience is a positive one and that their adoption of SQL is sort of a no-brainer, and we just don't give them excuses to say no. And so we've been paying a lot of attention to updating and upgrading all of the drivers to ensure that we have as much interop with all of the different tools around Microsoft outside of SQL itself. So not just SSMS and VS Code, but as well as making sure that Visual Studio, but also the libraries like Entity Framework and Aspire all have the SQL touchpoints that they need to have. So it's a big company, Greg. And I got to say, there's a lot of products. So if you're like, oh, make sure everything's integrated, that is a large task to swallow.
Yeah, indeed. And so, look, what we had on the show last time had Jess Pomfret, and we sort of talked through the Data API Builder, and we started to hint in that show about MCP. And so I thought you'd be the perfect person to come along and talk to us about that. And if I look at courses we've put out in recent times, we've got one on using AI features in SQL Server, and that's actually been one of the more popular ones immediately. Mm-hmm. So I know the interest is out there as well. Mm-hmm. And so maybe if we start from, I think a good starting point is probably agents and what an agent is and why do we even care as a database person?
Yeah, that's great. All right, let's have a pretend scenario, Greg, where you're my boss and you told me that you want an agentic solution here. And here are the things that I need to start
actually,
thinking
about. Actually, I'm going to interrupt you on that one because that's actually a fascinating thing, is the idea that the boss would say, I want an agentic solution. And the reason I raise that is that one of the odd things that we've come across with a lot of the AI features now is that it's actually almost like CEO-driven interest in this. I've had a number of clients who've said their CEO went off to some conference and came back and was asking all these sort of questions. And I think it's so important that you can be part of that conversation, because so many of the data people I've talked to are not really prepared to be part of that conversation. And then you could just be sidelined. And so it's just interesting that you mentioned that the boss is asking for an agentic solution. So,
yeah, it's almost like conference-driven development sometimes, isn't it? Where the thing that you're choosing is whatever's on the cover of the magazine. We haven't really had this happen for a while. Like for a while, you've even kind of felt like it's the grassroots effort that really makes a difference in the enterprise as far as technology choices. But when AI came around, especially MCP engagement around agents, yeah, the conversation shifted quickly, because it feels as if if you don't move fast enough, then you're never going to catch up. I think that is the sentiment that kind of strikes fear in the hearts of a lot of CEOs out there, that there's a small window of opportunity here, and you either strike or regret it forever. And so I feel like you have probably spoken a really important thing here about giving relevance to the person who gets, like, the CEO is already used to knowing that their nerds on staff are the ones who really understand what's going on. When they reach out to you and they say, you've got to explain this to me, what could we do next? Yeah, not to have an answer is, well, it's not the best thing for your career for sure. Not just that, but I feel like this is really intended to make us superstars. And right now it doesn't feel like that. I feel like most engineers, just generally speaking, feel like AI is out to get them. I don't believe that. And there are definitely
Actually, when I first posted about people learning this sort of stuff, it was interesting that one of the initial responses that came back were people saying, oh, that's all very well, but, you know, I need to keep the lights on with the existing database, and, you know, I'm never going to see this stuff in my systems for another 4 or 5 years, so why do I need to learn about it? And I thought, wow, that's pretty scary.
When I got out of college, the HTML spec was not even version one yet. And to learn it, you had to learn all like 7 tags. Like, it wasn't very much to learn all of HTML.
Yeah.
And then as it started to like grow, it was actually a lot easier for me to be able to absorb the quick change that was going on as you go to version 1, 2, 3, 4 and all, you know, hundreds and hundreds of new features. And I feel like that's where we are right now at sort of this weird pivot where, congratulations, we live in a time where a technology is so young that you actually have the opportunity to understand it and adopt it and kind of go with the flow rather than try and catch up later when the sophistication has cranked to 11.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so let's go ahead and promote you as an agentic solution.
Yeah. You're my CEO. You just got back from a conference. You come over to me and you say, I need an agentic solution here. So let me talk about some of the key things that I think everybody is going to need to consider, especially focused on the data plane. And so I think that's where it's going to matter the most. I would need to start beginning with an LLM model, a large language model. And so the reason I need that is I need something to process the probabilities for me. But those models don't do anything by themselves. Nobody invokes an LLM. Instead, you need to wrap it first with something that is a harness. And so today, the modern harness is really the agent. The agent is the thing that brings with it a set of instructions so it knows how to behave. And it's not just a generic model that just is processing things. That's really nice for us.
Which also was trained some time ago, too, I might add.
The model was. The model is going to have... That's right. And if you kind of look at the like a stack of pancakes here, the very bottom pancake is the system prompt that is embedded inside of the model. That's the system prompt that tells it to do a good job, basically. And then after that, the next pancake is the security prompt that says, you know, if somebody asks you to make a bomb, tell them no. And so those two things are pinned to the model regardless of the agent. The agent then, almost wrapped around it like a layer of an onion, is the thing that then takes it and says, I'm going to give you an additional prompt. So we're kind of into the third prompt here, where it's the instruction set for the agent. So the agent says, hey, now you work for a car manufacturing company, and you're attempting to find the quickest way to source a specific material, let's say. Mm-hmm. And that's the agent. So the agent has a role in life, but it doesn't really understand all that much and certainly doesn't have access to your underlying enterprise systems. But it does know at least what it's supposed to do. Now in order to really figure this out, you're going to have to tell it about your inventory, your products, all of your distribution centers and things like that you have stored that information in a variety of SQL servers out there. Well, there's no way for an agent to talk to a database. It just isn't a thing. Instead, what agents have been trained under the hood to do is be able to talk to an MCP endpoint. And so MCP is just an HTTP specification that's very similar to REST. That basically says
context protocol. Yep.
It that's right. MCP stands for model context protocol, intended for the model's context. And so the idea of context with the model says models are just going to hallucinate unless you give it information. So a lot like going to a junior high student and asking them to explain Shakespeare, they'll wing it and try and get a good grade in the class. But they're going to get it wrong. And models will do the exact same thing to you. But you take that same student and you give it all of Shakespeare's books and you walk it through all of the different, plot lines and everything else. By the time you get to the end and you ask that same student about Shakespeare, they'll do a great job. Models do the same thing. And when you provide the same type of context to them, so not just information, but also semantic explanation of that information. And so that's what you want to be able to do with your agent. So you have this sort of generic agent that's going to help you. And then that generic agent can't do anything without context. You want to provide that context to it. And the way that you would do that is basically take all of your enterprise data and give it to the agent. But that's impractical because enterprise data often is, perhaps gigabytes, maybe even terabytes or petabytes of data. And there's only so much room in the head of a student to be able to hold so much information. Very similarly, there's only so much room in the head of a model to be able to hold that as well. And so we call that the context window, how much information it can hold in its memory at one time. It's very easy to overflow that window, and it works as last in, last out, last in, last out, so that as you start putting more information in and it feels as if it's getting smarter, you run the risk of potentially taking those first lessons you gave it falling out of scope. And so we have to kind of balance that. And the way we balance it is with, at the highest level, we balance it with the RAG pattern. And so RAG is the augmented, it's really the ability for you to be able to point to data and take only a small slice of it. And so that's where MCP really plays a nice role. You have all these SQL servers behind the scenes with so much data, and you want to provide the model the ability to query against those data sets and return back such a small subset that it doesn't overwhelm its context window, but so much information that it's still able to make a really good prediction of how to answer the question that you're coming to. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interesting balancing game that every enterprise has to figure out on their own. Because let's say you're my CEO, you tell me to do this, part of the testing of my agentic solution is going to be just how much information can I give it until I've blown the windows out and it can't really process anymore. And then again, how little information can I give it until it could start to really provide value back to me and not just guess? And so it's a balance between a naive window with too little information, or a diluted window with too much information. And to get there, we have to first just give it simple access to the database. And that's where SQL MCP Server fills the gap. There must be some way to query the database. And that query has to be invoked by the model. And so the model already understands MCP as a standard, and it understands how to reach out and communicate with those. And then when I create my agent, which my special wrapper around this generic model, I also provide to it a pointer to the URL where this MCP server is. In fact, I might provide to it 2, 3, 4, 5 pointers to 2 or 3, 4, 5 different MCP servers all providing different types of data for different types of reasons. Each one of those provides, hopefully, a small subset of data that gives enough context so these models can provide value back to us. SQL MCP Server is not dedicated only to SQL. We call it SQL MCP Server because we love SQL and we love promoting the brand, but it really is just a database MCP server where the backend can be any of the Microsoft SQL family, as well as Postgres, as well as Cosmos DB, as well as, frankly, MySQL. And so because SQL MCP Server is open source and free, it gives a lot of enterprises brand new lease on life here where they can start to come up with scenarios that are on-prem if they need them to be, they're in another cloud if they need them to be, whatever kind of suits their requirements. Often, employees or engineers of any kind are backed against a wall and they have requirements that they can't control. And so we want to be able to provide to them a solution regardless of those different kind of scenarios. So what makes SQL MCP special, the SQL MCP server special, starting at the highest level is just it gives an agent the ability to query a database. That is the fundamental thesis, but there is so much detail under the hood here that's worth talking about. When an agent talks to a database through an MCP server, today it's very common that we are attracted almost like a moth to a flame to the simplest solution where it's a pass-through MCP server that simply takes a query created by an agent and executes it against the database. The truth of the matter is that is the simplest solution where you can simply allow your LLM to understand that it's a SQL server behind the scenes, provide to it your schema so it understands the schema, provide to it your prompt so it can understand how to write that query, and then it provides the T-SQL query to the MCP server that simply passes through and executes it.
And just executes it, yeah.
That's right.
Hi, this is Greg. Just wanted to thank you for listening to this show and let you know that if you'd like to let me teach you more about SQL Server, we now have both free courses and low-cost courses available online and on demand. The courses include detailed hands-on lab work for you to complete to reinforce your learning, and there are more courses coming in the next few months. You'll find details at training.sqldownunder.com.
Now, that may seem appealing on the surface, but there are a million devils in these details, that's for sure. Because even though you may be excellent at setting security on your database to ensure that DDL operations or something like dropping a table or dropping a database never occurs, nobody has security settings that say a query can't be inaccurate. And that is probably the biggest risk of allowing an agent like avant-garde kind of ad hoc pass-through laissez-faire sort of queries into your database, because the query itself may be so close to accurate that unless an expert like you, Greg, looks at it, you wouldn't even see the problem. You wouldn't even see the fact that it's missing this one predicate on the join or something like that. And now you get back this extremely confident answer from an agent. And you've asked, well, what's the...
Usually I would describe it as overly confident.
Yes. Overly confident. That's right. Sycophantically confident. And it says...
Yeah, it's one of the things with chat-based LLMs, I'm endlessly telling them not to like gaslight me. Like, please don't go over the top. Just if you don't know something, tell me.
That's true. And I find that actually a prompt that says, if you don't know something, tell me, actually does help. It somehow gives it permission to not know the answer. Nonetheless, if it does this query that's slightly inaccurate, it gives back to you an answer confidently, and then you are making business decisions that are potentially even more devastating than dropping a table, where you could drop a table that just causes us to go find the backup. But now you tell...
Yeah, you know immediately that there's a problem. It's in the 1980s, I did a lot of maintenance on mini computers and things like that. I had an old friend, Phil, who used to say, the more smoke and flames, the better.
Right. That's right. At least you know there's a problem.
When there was smoke and flames, you knew what was broken.
That's very similar to here, right? Because the subtlety of in invalid results is so difficult to track. And it's not a matter of like audit logs or anything like that. It's just an error. It's just an incorrect query that comes back with a value that you thought was right. And these systems, the reason you as my CEO wanted an agentic solution isn't just because it's the trend, but it's also because you believe that having an agent be able to do this work for you will maximize productivity, will unlock opportunities that you didn't see before. And so the last thing you want to do is have the user validate the query every time. That just short circuits the entire like benefit. And not only that, it adds to the system a requirement on the user that's so high, they have to understand the schema of the database and they have to understand the like subtle semantics of T-SQL as well, make sure that it's right. The real dream is just say to your agent, what product should I drop next quarter? And it just gives you the answer back. That's what you really want to have happen. And raw SQL running against your database that's generated by the agent is just fundamentally problematic in no small part because an agent is indeterminate. And so even though you may have tested your system 100 times to make sure that the agent creates excellent queries, there is still no guarantee that the 101st time is going to be an excellent query. And if you care about your production data, if you care about your business, like all those things like that, all of a sudden, this is almost unacceptable to say that I'm going to have a system that I'm not quite sure if it's going to be accurate every time. That is a crazy thing to even think about. And so SQL MCP server.
It's hard to get used to, actually. It's again, even in the chat style things, if people have tried these things much, you know, I've like asked a chat system to, I don't know, transform some data from one shape to another for me. And I give it 10 of them to do. And the first three are fine. But then on the fourth one, things changed. And it's just a different form of computing to anything we used to in the past.
Yeah. If there is an evolution of the way we prompt these models in the future, I'm sure it will be, we ask them to do either less or just slightly different things. I think at this point, because we don't know what they can't do, we tend to think they can do everything. And I think that's some of the disappointment we're experiencing as we interact with them as well. SQL MCP server, by the way, is not a pass-through for T-SQL. If an agent writes a T-SQL query, there's no way for SQL MCP server to allow that to execute on the database, and that is 100% by design. Instead, SQL MCP server exposes a very constrained surface area to the agent to make sure that when it's trying to create the recipe for whatever that query is going to be, it can only do certain things where it describes the query. And then the query builder inside of SQL MCP server is what translates that into T-SQL, which is always deterministic. In fact, it's always the same. There's no model or anything inside SQL MCP server. It takes all of the input variables and translates those in a way that you could test a trillion times over and you would always get back the same response. Yeah.
So generally with MCP servers, they talk about exposing tools.
That's exactly right. And so if you think about the CRUD operations, the CRUD, create, read, update, and delete operations, and perhaps E for executing a stored procedure, those five operations, or let's just say four for now, those four operations against the table make total sense to create a create, read, update, a delete customer table, and then a create, read, update, delete inventory table. And then a create, read. So far, we're up to eight tools. And for every table we introduce, we have another four tools. You have 1,000 tables. Well, let's just say it's simple. You have 10 tables in your database. You now have 40 tools. Now you're already approaching a threshold because every tool has a semantic description of itself, has a semantic description of every parameter that goes into it, and then has a semantic description of its return type and all the columns that'll be output from it. That's a lot of information. It's what is required to make sure that the model understands the tool, but multiply that by four and then again by 10, or let's go more realistic where you have 100 tables, where you have now 400 different tools. You've completely overwhelmed that context window that we were talking about that models have. And now, instead of providing tools to allow it to work, the tools themselves have overwhelmed it before you even provide data back to it. And so the way SQL MCP Server is, it only provides 7 consistent tools back to a model. And so that means if you have a database with 10 or a database with 10,000 tables, it is always the same number of tools, making it so that you can scale nicely and not worry about just overwhelming that context window. That's probably one of the biggest value adds to SQL MCP Server, not just the guardrails to make sure you don't execute raw SQL, but also because we have this ability to scale up your database without blowing up your model at the same time.
We should, I suppose, throw in at this point something around the security, like the server itself is going to have to execute with some identity against the database. And so what's the current story there?
Well, that's a great point, because SQL MCP Server is Data API Builder. It's the same engine with two names. And people just don't Google Data API Builder with MCP capabilities. Everybody just Googles SQL MCP Server. So we've given it two names just so people can find it. And the reason I make that point is Data API Builder has been a REST endpoint providing APIs against the database for apps for a long time. And the architectural pattern around authentication there is that the user who is authenticating to a web app, let's say, they use Entra ID, they have their own token, they're a user. And then the API that's being accessed by that website, which would be Data API Builder, it also has its own identity inside the tenant. And then that is the identity that reaches out and talks to the database. If you look at the audit logs, it is the API that's doing the work. For years, this has been a totally fine approach. Everybody does it this way. This is the 90 percentile of everybody doing it. But agentic work is different. It makes people extremely nervous that there is no chain of custody in operations. And they want to make sure that if I am asking the database to do something, it is not occluded behind the veil of an agent. So that if an agent does 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 operations, as a user, I actually don't know that. I've just asked a simple question of which product should we drop next quarter. It has done tons of queries behind the scenes that I never saw happen. And I want it to be like that. I want it to give me the answer, not tell me all the stuff it had to do to get there. Just like an executive today comes to a data engineer and asks the same thing, like which one should we drop next? And they do all this work. They just want the answer. Well, that is a real source of contention in the authentication kind of world here. And so as a result, we've introduced on behalf of our pass-through authentication that makes it so that the caller's token gets passed to the agent, then the agent passes that through to the MCP server. The MCP server passes that through to the database. So the audit logs inside the database are on behalf of the original caller. That really cleans things up to ensure that if you need to figure out how all this happened and who did what, there's a neck you can actually wring, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, one of the challenges that I've seen with various MCP servers is also the positioning of them. I did an article for Simple Talk recently on sort of local and remote MCP servers. And of course, one of the challenges is also where the server is located network-wise, essentially, as opposed to the client that's asking the question or the agent that's asking the question. But again, how the identity is able to travel around. And that gets, with the ones where it's remote, particularly a lot of cloud services, that's become quite tricky, actually.
You're right. In fact, pass-through authentication isn't supported by every OAuth provider. And so that means if you're not at a place where you can register an application inside of a specific tenant, you have to fall back to that place where the MCP server has its own identity. And it's the thing that's logging in. In fact, depending on your scenario, you may not even have a tenant and you're using username and password to authenticate into SQL Server. Now, I can't force a company to do it right, and sometimes neither can the DBA, right? They, like, your hands are completely tied. Well, now you need to just start recognizing that there's an entirely new risk metrics matrix that you need to start like thinking through. On the one hand, it's worth saying that you shouldn't do this until you can have authentication really squared away. Yeah. But on the other, like if you know that that's a 10-year project and it'll never get funded, well, you need to find some sort of a workaround and then have, you know, an understanding of what those risks are. It's not outrageous to say that, you know, we're going to find a way to do it without all of the best practices in place. It's just a decision that needs to be made with your eyes open to ensure that this is the best thing you can do for your company, given the scenario and the constraints that you're in.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And so the focus of the tools in SQL MCP Server is predominantly around queries or around DDL type operations?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because there are really three main planes that matter. The first is the control plane, being able to provision the SQL Server itself. So nothing to do with the schema, just the underlying piece. So if you're in the cloud, you know, actually deploying an Azure SQL, if you're on-prem, actually deploying a new database in a server, that's nice. That is an MCP server of its own and has nothing to do with SQL MCP Server. And sometimes that is a bridge too far already. Like a lot of people are like, listen, we're not going to be provisioning through our agents anyway, that, you know, we can handle it. That'll be great. Unless you want to. I mean, there is certainly a use case where an agent can soup the nuts, handle everything. But
yeah,
that's the control plane. The next plane up is sometimes located inside the developer loop, where you are iterating against a schema, trying to like really figure out the best thing to do. So just imagine a data engineer trying to figure out, how normalized is normalized, how denormalized is denormalized, how and on it goes. So those are all the DDL operations, or the data definition language operations that you would run against your database. It's changing its structure for whatever reason. And that is also not what SQL MCP Server is. The third and final plane is the data plane. And that is where SQL MCP Server lands and really was built for this, making it so that you can interact with your production data in a safe, feature-rich way, both through the REST and GraphQL APIs that Data API Builder provides for your applications, and MCP endpoints so that you could have all of your agentic solutions as well, all within the same engine. So the way that Data API Builder works is, because you'll remember this from your previous episode, that it's just a single JSON configuration where you can say something like REST enabled equals true. Now you have REST endpoints. But I could also say MCP enabled equals true.
And I might add GraphQL. I was so impressed. That was just out of the box in Data API Builder as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And in fact, a lot of engineers are drawn towards GraphQL and then abandon GraphQL because there's this big barrier of entry to get it working. Once you have it, it is dazzling. And so Data API Builder, the fact that you could just say, oh, these tables and this is how they're related, and now you have a graph engine, is pretty stunning. Yeah, no doubt about it. And so you're absolutely right.
The whole discussion there particularly with Fabric and ontologies and all of that becomes a topic for another day. But yeah, that's super important.
Yeah, and of course, ontologies are back in the news now. You know, we use data dictionaries, but nonetheless, they're back kind of front of mind, because the more information you can provide to these models so that they understand your data, the better they can influence the queries that are going to be written, know which kind of data.
Yeah, of course. So that's the fundamental issue is that the model has to have, we have to have some understanding of what on earth the data is referring to. And it'd be great if the databases use the same words as the people asking the questions, but sadly, that's often not the case.
That's exactly right. And then that makes sense to have this ontology. And even if it's not an ontology, I mean, just having a description of how two tables relate in a way that it isn't just foreign key, or primary key, foreign key, that's an incredible value. I mean, incredible. Or just saying cust ID doesn't mean customer ID. It means, you know, custard ID. I don't know what it would be, but the thing that I know you might infer it means this, but it doesn't mean that. We just inherited that from a mainframe that we merged with 6 years ago or something like that. And that's that sort of value back to these models who are, they're just doing their best, right? That you're like, oh, here's the table, here are my columns, what should I get? And like, oh, I'll do my best.
But you provide. Least favorite is this column contains three different things. And it depends upon another column as to which thing it is.
So on. So many times we provide a table to a model when we should be providing a view to a model so we can fix problems like that.
Correct.
Yeah.
And sadly, the thing that I've always thought's missing in SQL Server is a way to have a programmatically discoverable understanding of relationships between views.
Oh my gosh, that's absolutely right. Now, the backlog or the roadmap here for SQL MCP Server includes relationships between views. But man, I wish I could tell you right now that relationships between views, even logical relationships instead of physical relationships,
yes,
is coming to
logical
SQL.
Relationships.
Boy, would I love to tell you. Yeah. That's a huge value add that is bound to be around the corner, right? Bound to be. Yeah. That being said,
that's one I've wanted for many years. But anyway,
we keep talking about semantic description. Just to make sure everybody listening understands, there's nothing really like complicated about this. It's the natural language definition or description of the table, and then the column, and then the relationship to that other table. Just as if you were sitting next to a peer of yours, pointing at it on your screen and saying, oh yeah, this is where we store that is exactly the type of description we're talking about and exactly the type of description that a model needs to be effective. And so the less you provide, the less accurate and maybe even successful your model or your agent is going to be when it's trying to answer your questions. So SQL MCP Server.
Many databases are just problematic in this. I mean, you know, it's fine if you're looking for products or stock items and the things called product are products, but it's a real problem if the table is called XCN10067, you know?
Yeah. And we have Purview at Microsoft. It's kind of like our data dictionary is Purview. But the problem really isn't a technology problem. The problem really is a person problem where who is actually the SME who is able to describe that column? Like who really knows all three of those values depending on the value of the other column and can, you know, ensure that it's correct, and then we can codify it and put it somewhere. And then the next problem is, oh, congratulations, we've codified it. How do we possibly integrate that information into all these other systems that are using it? It's definitely a difficult bridge that we have. And I think you and I have talked about it in the past, how we have metadata built into SQL Server. It would be really nice if we could standardize and start using that as a source of metadata.
Completely. It's interesting. In the 80s and early 90s, I worked a lot with Progress. And one of the things, I didn't like their Windows product, but back when they were text-based products, one of the things I really liked is that every column in the database had quite a bit of metadata associated with it. And it was interesting from a developer point of view is that this was all programmatically discoverable. So, you know, if you went to put a prompt on the screen to ask a question about the column, you know, that was part of the metadata of the column, you know, and so on and so on. What input mask did it look like, or, you know, all these sorts of things. It was just interesting to have that sort of metadata there, where when I first got to SQL Server, one of the things I missed immediately was the fact that we were just sort of storing the data and that was it.
Yeah. And not the information, not just the data. Yeah. Wouldn't it be fascinating? You know how if you try and write a join today inside T-SQL and join against two columns that are different data types, you'll get an error that says, you know, this is not going to work. Wouldn't it be awesome if you could set some sort of a server level flag that said, if you try and query against a table that doesn't have metadata, then you'll get an error. And it just imagine the forcing of the function to make sure that the metadata is present across your entire database so that all of your queries work. I'm just thinking, how do you motivate the human? Because that's the hardest part, is getting them to actually do it.
We're pretty much getting to time, Jerry. And so two things I wanted to ask you about. What can you share about the directions and roadmap for this that you're able to share? And then the other aspect is, what have you got coming up and where will people see you or hear from you?
I appreciate that. Yeah. So from SQL MCP Server, there are two really exciting things that are coming. So we've already sort of, I don't want to say solved, but we sort of provided a real solution to make it so that SQL MCP Server is the answer that you need in a production scenario at the data plane, regardless of your authentication scheme, regardless of how you want to store your secrets, regardless of all these different things. We've built the capability into it. And because it's part of Microsoft Fabric and it's actually the engine behind Fabric's GraphQL API, we've kind of proven that it can pretty much freaking scale. And that's the nice thing behind it as well. And still open source and free. So that's the crazy part. As far as the next step, though, we have probably one of the neatest things coming is an attention turning to embeddings. And so right now, one of the hardest things to deal with is embedding natural language into a vector or into an array of floats. And the reason it's difficult is just because all of these systems are disconnected. And so we're building an embedding subsystem into SQL MCP Server. So this week, actually, we're going to announce that SQL MCP Server is GA now. So this is Data API Builder 2.0 is now GA and outside of public preview. So that's really great. And so that's 2.0. And then 2.1 is where we'll be introducing this new embedding feature that allows you, like today you have the slash GraphQL gives you the GraphQL endpoint, slash API gives you the REST, slash MCP gives you an MCP endpoint, all on the same engine. And we're adding slash embed to allow you to provide to it certain any size natural language that will automatically chunk it and vectorize it for you. And so really exciting feature to try and take just some of the pain points out of this rag pattern.
The chunking is another interesting discussion for another day too. But it's just, I suppose, for people listening who are not used to it, it's more sort of, you can imagine if you have a large piece of text, you don't really want to get an embedding on the large piece of text. You sort of want pieces of it, but you've got to then, how do you break it up that makes sense? And so, yeah, it's interesting.
That's exactly right. And it's so important to do as well, because if you try and vectorize an enormous part of text, you're going to lose so much data because the vector is still a specific dimension array. And so to jam that in there, you're just going to lose detail. You must.
You just lose meaning. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, you could take documents from your organization and get embeddings back for them all, but they could all end up sounding like they're similar. And that's even when they're not, you know, because just different pieces you've looked at. Or, same with boilerplate code or, I don't know, legal documents. I mean, it just goes on.
The example I use, Greg, is like, let's pretend you had the cure to cancer and it's 10,000 lines and you're going to read it off to me. And you're at line 8,000. I'm like, hang on just a second. I need to summarize these 8,000 lines so I can keep going. You're like, wait a minute. Yep. You just lost the cure to cancer. So that's what ends up happening is this summarization ruins, the detail orientedness of this data. Well, anyway, so that's the first thing that's exciting is to have this embedding story, and we're gonna start to have a semantic search or vector search, the same thing. Enabled at the API layer so that if the backend database, you don't have to do that for SQL Server 2025 because it's built in. But what if you have SQL Server 2016 and you still want to have that? So we're going to add this internal ability to do semantic, and including a backend disk disk graph that shows the relationships between them, all by using managed Redis as well. So there's a lot of integration points. It's going to be a big story that should enable a lot of customers who feel like they're locked in out of that scenario right now. The other is we hope that we will be able to deliver this in our new, I just forgot the letters, ADC, agentic. Gosh, I can't believe I've forgotten, Greg. But basically, today's story for deploying SQL MCP Server is to ACA or Azure Container Apps or ACI or Kubernetes or anything that would host a container. And even though you have the option not to use a container, most do. Well, that's okay, but it takes several minutes to deploy. And then there's a certain complexity around it that if you're not used to hosting containers can kind of drive you crazy. We have a new deployment mechanism coming up, and we'll announce the public preview of it at Build. I don't mind talking about it now. It's not a secret. It's just when we'll make the big fanfare. And that is probably the next really exciting thing for SQL MCP server, so that we can deploy it so quickly, so easily, and it's just built for MCP operations, handles the scope of the session context and the session ID across various calls as well. So really, really exciting. So that embedding piece and this new deployment model, it's neat, Greg. There's a future that here that is pretty going to be cool.
And so what about yourself? What have you got coming up, and where will people see you or hear from you?
Well, I just got back from NDC. I was just in Sydney, just right around the corner from you. And that was a great time. Yeah, no doubt. And Toronto too. And so in the future, though, there's a handful of, it's really nice. My role inside of the SQL org has kind of, it was already leaning into the evangelism side for SQL. It's really turning a corner to be focused even more around evangelism, which makes me really happy. Yeah. And it gives me the opportunity to share what really is kind of a complicated story and hopefully simplify it and make it appealing to developers and DBAs alike. And so I'll say this transition and this reorg inside of SQL is happening almost as we speak. So I can't say right now exactly how it's going to all land, but I'm super excited about it because this is really what I've been pushing for the longest time, to be able to kind of craft this larger narrative, to be able to tell the story and make it compelling to a broader audience and kind of nurture the community that we have. SQL is kind of special, to be honest.
Mm.
SQL, Microsoft could disappear and the SQL community would continue. It's really stunning. And I don't know of any other product quite like this, especially in the Microsoft world. The fact that, I mean, SQL Saturdays, for example, and I mean, just there's so many things that they just have kind of a momentum of their own. And so we want to make sure that, you know, that we nurture those as best as we can, and we're as friendly to those as we possibly can be. So that's my tomorrow. We'll see what actually ends up happening, but I appreciate the fact that you asked.
Thank you so very much for your time today, Jerry.
Greg, this has been great. You know, I love talking about this anyway, and it's great talking to you.
Thank you.